It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so last Tuesday night, I'm coming home, maybe 9 o'clock in the evening, in a very bad mood. The details of why I'm in a very bad mood actually don't even pertain to the story, so don't worry about that. But I come home in a very bad mood, taking stuff out of my pockets. Trish doesn't know I'm home yet. She's in the back somewhere. And I'm putting, you know, my keys down and my wallet and all that. And I put down the key fob to our car. We only have one right now because somebody lost one. So we share this one. And it bounces off the table into, like, that pile of crap back there, basically. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't want to cope with this right now. But I gotta cope with this. I'm not gonna wait till the morning and then we can't drive to work or something. So I'm going through it and I can't find it. And I'm trying, I still can't, and like I'm getting really hot, both emotionally and physically, because it's very warm also at this point. So I go back, see Trish, and I'm like, and I'm bitching about my night and stuff. And I said, I can't find the fob right now. I'll get to it, but it just, I couldn't take it anymore. And she says, you want me to check? And I was like, no, you don't have to. It's a very small area. Shouldn't be that tough. But then she comes out and does it anyway. I'm like, okay, fine. So I'm sitting in this chair while she's over there messing around with things and stuff. Just, you know, moral support, I guess. I don't know. It'd be weird to, like, go watch TV or something. That would feel weird, don't you think? But anyway, so she's looking around for it. And then she says, she picks up this little glove and she puts it in front of me. She says, can you take care of that bug? And I'm like, what bug? I'm looking all over. I don't see a bug. She's like, there. And she points to the glove again, and I see that there is what I later learned from her apparently is a moth larva. In my head, it kind of looked like a maggot or something. Mm. And I was like, I'll deal with that. But again, in a bad mood. And sometimes, I've got to deal with this stuff, and it's not one that, like, scares me. Like, if it's a spider or something, no. But, like, a box elder bug or something. Sometimes, the answer is, I just squish it between two fingers, and then I'll go wash my hands. Mm. So I reach out. As I am doing now, just to show you how far out my arm is, probably a good 2 feet from my body, okay, and down like a foot from my face, and I squish it, and it squirts. And it squirts far enough to splatter on my glasses. Yeah. I lost my shit. I was like, oh my God! And she's like, what? I'm like, it squirted me in the face! But this was exactly what I needed, because we just both could not stop laughing for like 5 minutes. And every once in a while, I'd stop laughing to be like, I cannot believe, oh my God! But yeah, so that broke the tension very well. But it was really disgusting.
Yeah.
I'm like, really, I don't even feel like the physics should work. That, like, it shouldn't be able to shoot that far. That's not right. It's not that, like, how is that? No, but yeah, so.
Okay.
That's just a random story, even more random than most of the stories we tell. And that's what I put in the cold open, as it were.
Okay.
Usually, that's the only place I know to put those. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that literally just almost referred to itself as the Magical Talking Hat Batman. Because I was looking at your shirt. I'm Tony, he's Batman.
And I'm William. And this is episode 374.
I think I also believe that, so I'm going to let it slide. But just let the record show. There was a tremendous hesitance, both in the time and the looks on his face.
Well, you know,
he was kind of like half moving, like he was going to run for the door.
I'm late, you know, because
Oh no! Did you run into another guy who had been in prison and?
No, traffic wasn't that good, so.
Oh.
And it throws me off my game.
I see.
I don't have much of a game to begin with, so.
So it's not a far throw, but doesn't take much. Very small play area.
Exactly. Very narrow box. Yes. And if I get pushed out of it, that's it.
For some reason, that reminds me back in the old days of Mystery Science Theater 3000, in the Deep 13 days, there was an invention exchange where the Mads invented the square. And it was the latest fitness craze. And it was just a mat that had a square on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, want to work on your upper body? Sit down, put your hands on either side of the square, and start doing push-ups. Looking for something more cardio-based? Go inside the square. And you see the guy just step inside. He's like, do leg lifts. And like it's just all exercises revolving around the square. So that feels like your game to me.
That's
right
it.
There.
You got it.
And that'd be easy to get thrown out of. It was maybe 18 inches across.
Yeah, really easy. Super easy.
For those of you just joining us, it feels disingenuous when I say this stuff now.
Why?
Because so little of the show is this stuff. All right. But part of the problem with that is we get light on questions. So even if we wanted to get question heavy, then we would run out. So, what I'm about to describe, you could help with this.
Yeah.
We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat.com. I feel like I energized my... I feel like I gave myself a pep talk there or something.
Yeah, you worked yourself
people, up. Awesome people, like all of you, he said, gesturing to the cardboard boxes, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that, that help us create content to use the nomenclature the kids are using these days.
Yep.
The hat magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's Etruscan servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. Or we would, if we could. What's weird is I feel like that's the second time I've used Etruscan.
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't have a very good memory for things like that.
Gotta work on that.
Or for anything, yeah. But oh well.
I was going to ask you how your week was, but I'm worried you can't remember.
You know, a lot of things happened. We saw The Post.
The Post.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm familiar.
It's that movie about when the Pentagon Papers were first discovered.
As in... Washington.
Post.
Yeah. How was that?
It was
I heard it was remarkably adequate. people said it's good, but it didn't seem to have much impact.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to describe it. I mean, I thought the performances were pretty good in it, but...
And I'm a sucker for, like, All the President's Men kind of shit.
I mean... It was a little like that, but I mean, the thing is, it was mostly about, the interesting thing about it is, most of the President's Men angle was going on over at the New York Times. Right? The Post was just sort of catching up.
Oh.
And the drama in the story is, or the way they frame the drama of the story, who knows? Really,
yeah, of course.
But the way they frame the drama of the story is that the woman who now owns the paper, who it was her father who owned it before her, and then when he died, he left it to her husband, you know, as it happened back then, right? And now her husband, I think, committed suicide, and so she owns it now. And so the story's really about how her struggling to you know, what do I do? Because she was perfectly happy with her husband getting it instead of her, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And now not only is she getting this newspaper, now she has to take the responsibility of it that she was perfectly happy to let her husband handle. But now there's a big thing going on, and it's happening at the same time the paper's going public.
Oh.
I mean, in the movie. Okay. I don't know if in real life. So, when the New York Times started getting in trouble for releasing the Pentagon Papers, the Washington Post had to decide. So the New York Times had stopped for a little while publishing them because they were in legal trouble.
Oh, okay.
So the Washington Post saw their opportunity. Well, then we'll publish
them. To get
in
legal trouble.
Yeah. But then they were going to get in legal trouble. So should they, shouldn't they? And I guess historically what they're trying to say is because the Washington Post stepped up, a lot of other papers did too. And this ended up helping the New York Times in the end because, you know, you're not going to put all the papers out of business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this,
well, I mean, not back then.
So this probably helped. This probably helped out. But the real intrigue started and was mostly going on at the New York Times. But that's not the story they're telling. So
that's a difference. This is like the sequel. And like how some Saw sequels take place during other Saw sequels. It's that kind of thing.
So that was all right. But probably the most interesting thing I saw over the week was...
This is going to be their cinematic universe. The Watergate cinematic universe. It's just movies from different perspectives during the same time period.
Almost a year after the Supreme Court decision.
This is a great idea. Why didn't I think of this?
Almost a year after the Supreme Court decision that got everybody off the hook for publishing the Pentagon Papers, almost a year to the day after that, the Watergate thing happened.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Post, Washington Post broke that story. But anyway, the most interesting thing I saw this week was relating to something that happened about 2.5 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago now, back in Marion County, where I'm from, Marion County, Iowa.
I am also from Marion County.
There was a...
But Oregon.
There was a murder in a family that my family knows. I didn't really know anybody involved, but my family did. A woman named Shirley Carter was murdered in her home, and nobody knew what happened. There was an office that was torn up, like someone was looking for something in there, so they thought, well, there was a robbery or something. Shirley got home, caught the person in the process of robbing her house, and got shot twice and killed. But further investigation questioned that theory because certain things weren't missing that should have been missing if it was a robbery, and so on and so forth. So for a long time in the last 2.5 years, when I go home, it almost would always come up. Hey, did anyone ever figure out what happened to Shirley Carter? No.
I know it can't be true, but part of me really thinks this is going to turn out the Golden State Killer got her.
No. But anyway, this past February, I didn't know this, because the last time I went home was last weekend for Dad's birthday. And I asked again does anybody know what happened? Well, and they said, well, back in February, I don't know why they didn't tell me this when I was back home before. Back in February, Dateline had a story about it. It's like, oh, okay, well, I didn't know that. So this week, I watched the Dateline episode about this murder. And what happened was, initially, Shirley's husband, Bill, dropped her off at the house. And as far as he knew, nobody else was there. He's got two other kids, but they don't live nearby. He's got one youngest kid named Jason who helps around the farm. But Jason didn't seem to be there. Nobody else seemed to be there. But he dropped his wife off because he had to take some grain to the elevator. So they just went to Casey's and gotten some coffee. He dropped her off, and he got the truck that was hauling the grain hopper or whatever, and he went out to the grain elevator, and that was, you know, it for him. Then he was coming home, and he got a call from his daughter, who said that Shirley had been shot and killed, that Jason, the youngest boy, had found her and called his sister and called 911. And when Bill got to the farm, sure enough, there she was. She'd been shot twice with some kind of high-powered rifle, they presumed, because the bullets went right through her and damaged the floor and a refrigerator. And the office was torn up like someone was looking for something in there. And so that was the going theory, was that she interrupted a robbery and she was killed. And then Jason, who was going over to the farm to do some spraying, we went to the house and found her there. But apparently, over time, when the theories didn't seem to add up, but they weren't finding any suspects or they weren't blaming anyone, they looked into the husband, of course, but he had a pretty airtight alibi in terms of, because when he dropped her off, she made a phone call, and then he got to the grain elevator at a particular time, so it's like, well, there's no way he would have had time to do it, so it wasn't him. And just about everyone else had alibis and whatnot. So they just couldn't figure it out. The only person who didn't have an alibi was Jason, who called it in. And it was, things about the whole thing were kind of suspicious. Like when he called in the 911 call, he was talking about the crime scene, like where the bullet holes were. And he speculated that she'd been there for 2 hours and weird stuff that you wouldn't expect anybody would say in a 911 call, much less the son of the victim. Very strange stuff. So eventually the father starts to suspect, Bill starts to suspect that Jason did it. And he starts to piece together a motive because he finds out that his son had been having an affair, cheating on his wife. Well, Bill is very religious and is pretty sure that Jason would have thought if he found out, he would have disowned him.
Mm-hmm.
Jason knew that when Bill and Shirley passed on, that he was going to inherit all of the farmland, and that the last appraisal of it amounted to, like, I don't know, $8 million or something, some ridiculously high amount of money. So what Bill started to think was, well, Jason thought Shirley must have known about the affair and was going to tell me, and Jason knew he'd get disowned and not get his $8 million or whatever, so he killed her. But there was no evidence. Nobody could figure this out. So what the Dateline thing was really about was how, first of all, how Bill started to have all these suspicions, but also filed a civil suit, which I hadn't been aware that he did that. So he filed a civil suit, and it was tried in Knoxville, which is the county seat of Marion County. Tried in Knoxville. And it was interesting because the jury had to find two things, because Bill accused Jason of wrongful death, you know, but the Jason's defense was that Bill did it.
Oh.
So in the civil trial, the jury had to make a decision on both things. They had to decide if Jason was guilty of wrongful death and if Bill was guilty of wrongful death. Eventually, the jury found that Jason was guilty and Bill was not, and then the jury decided, you know, to award Bill $10 million or whatever, but that was beside the point. What Bill was trying to do was get this civil thing done, and he hired some private investigator from Texas to see if he could figure out, you know, gather evidence or figure out what happened, and that helped Bill win the civil case against his son, Jason. And then, like, the next day or 2 days later, they arrested Jason, and he's going to go up on criminal charges soon.
Because Bill just gave all the evidence that they'd collected to the police.
Basically.
And said, maybe look at this.
Basically. So this is what Dateline's show is about. I was like, wow, that's crazy
stuff. Dude, I think you're making all this up, because I'm pretty sure that's the plot for upcoming season 4 of Fargo. Like, that absolutely sounds like a season of Fargo.
Totally insane. And this was just, I mean, this is just like, these people live, like, I don't know, 5 miles away from my dad.
And it's freaking Melcher, Dallas.
Yeah.
There's never going to be a more interesting story in that town.
So this,
like, you might have to reference it on your welcome to Melcher, Dallas signs.
Well,
like,
this guy, Bill, is
home of that freaky murder thing.
No, look, Bill is like a year younger than Dad, so Dad knows him pretty well. I don't know if he went to Melcher or not, because they live closer to Pleasantville, and I think their kids might have gone to school in Pleasantville or Knoxville or something.
Well, then it's a PR race. Who can claim him first?
But it's like, I mean, a murder is one thing, but then the father blaming the son and taking him to court is like, wow, this is
at minimum, crazy. It's a really involved episode of Law and Order.
Well, and it's Dateline, so you know they kept talking about how Shakespearean the whole thing was.
Yeah.
Shakespearean in Marion County, Iowa.
See, but this is what makes me nervous, and when you're talking about the movie earlier, too, it is now a thing for me where if something is based on a true story, that's a huge mark against me wanting to see it.
Because of how many changes they probably made to it?
Yes. Yeah. It's twofold. One is that now they pretty much always change whatever the fuck they want. I told you about the one with the woman who fell in love with the man and they were sailing the sailboat across the planet, basically.
Okay.
There's this movie that's coming out that's based on this real story, based on the memoir that the woman wrote. She meets this guy and they fall in love and they agree to take a rich guy's yacht, you know, sail it.
You're talking about,
yeah.
Yeah.
And in it, the worst hurricane ever happened.
Yeah, storm, yeah.
And so the boat's wrecked. It's just like a hull at this point. And he's totally beat up. And so she gets him back on the boat and everything, but like everything on him is broken. He literally can't sit up or anything like that. He can't move. And so she decides the only thing they can do is to eyeball it and shoot for Hawaii.
Mm.
And if they miss that, they're just fucked. And she does it. And it's wonderful. And they tell that she writes a book about it and they make a movie about it. One thing, the dude died in the hurricane.
Oh no.
Yeah. They make it this amazing love story thing, and there's all sorts of bits. But dude died in the storm, or at least was lost and never found again.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, what? Why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do that?
And, I mean, I haven't actually seen the movie, I don't know if maybe he dies just as they arrive, so it's extra heartbreaking or whatever. But, no, she 100% did. See, it even, like, to me, it makes it less. She did that alone.
Well,
she didn't even have anybody to talk to or consult or anything.
But in the movie, they probably needed someone for her to talk to.
Because otherwise, it's boring as shit.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe I'm making the whole fucking. Maybe the end, the twist is she imagined him. Like, that would be cool.
Well, what bothers me about things based on history is when things are told out of order. Like, well, this didn't really happen. This happened first. But they tell it out of order for a narrative reason.
Yeah.
But it happened in order for a reason, so why not just tell it like it happened?
So that's the thing, is they frequently change the story for very exploitative reasons.
Yeah.
And if, for some reason, they don't change the story, it's almost always to exploit the shit out of the actual horrible, it's always horrible thing that happened.
Yeah.
There are rare exceptions. Those tend to be documentaries, and they tend to be very indie things. But yeah, I'm at the point where I'm like, based on a true story, yeah, fuck that.
So yeah, that was an interesting thing. We just watched that the other night. But we've been watching all kinds, you know, The Post was one of those things that during award season got nominated.
Yeah.
Three Billboards, we watched that. You know, Shape of Water. All this stuff we've been watching that was, you know, getting nominations for awards and stuff. And I have to say, for the most part, I'm not understanding how some of these things they're fine films, but if I didn't know they were nominated for awards, I wouldn't have guessed it.
It was a definite quiet award season, I think. I mean, mostly the only things I was paying attention to was Three Billboards, and I still haven't even seen that. Get Out and Big Sick.
Now, see, Get Out, I understand. Mm. That was a pretty interesting movie. But that's what I mean. Usually when it used to be that when award season came along and they were talking about movies that I hadn't seen, I'd try to see them. And almost always I could see, yeah, I see why that was nominated, because that's for whatever it was nominated for. But this time around, and maybe for the last couple times around, I'm like, yeah, I guess. I mean,
Oscar bait is a real thing, and it's starting to become a template.
Yeah.
Put this in there, and usually it's some particular subject, and a certain person acting, and a certain person doing the music, and it's pretty guaranteed to at least get nominated for things, as long as the good actor does a good job in it. So you pick something really meaty.
I guess.
I cannot tell you how uninterested I am in Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill.
Oh, we saw that.
Winston Churchill is a fascinating character. Gary Oldman is one of the greatest actors of our time, I believe. I just don't give a shit. I've seen people do Churchill. I get the idea.
Darkest Hour, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We just,
which again, nominated for tons of shit, and I didn't see it. But I'm just like,
we did see it.
What? And was it impressive?
I'm going to tell you this. I was blown away by John Lithgow's Churchill in The Crown.
Yeah. He got a lot of
away by
he got
it.
A lot of.
I was not
props
blown
for
away
that.
By this at all.
And the excitement.
He disappeared in the role. All the stuff that Gary Oldman.
Well, yeah,
had.
And some of the excitement is I think he gained a lot of weight for it or something. But
it's the but. You know, you can't just be, you get a guy like Gary Oldman who can nail a part. You've got to have a good script. You've got to have, there's just got to be all
in the world of should, you are correct. Yeah. What I'm saying is in the world of is, I think that's true now. It obviously is.
I mean, it was okay.
Yeah.
And again, I give him credit. Look, I thought Meryl Streep in The Post, that's, out of all the films I've seen that people have been talking about for awards, that's the most award-worthy performance I've seen.
And I can appreciate a good performance, but I'm also at the point where I'm like, yeah, so-and-so really nailed the boring, short, uninteresting part.
Right.
Like, because I see that plenty of times. How many times recently have I been like, this movie sucked, but I'll have to specify that everyone in it performed it really well.
Yeah.
That comes up a lot
yes.
lately. Like, they did
yes.
great jobs with the crap thing they had.
Exactly. That's how I felt about a lot of this stuff. It's like, well, yeah, like Shape of Water. Oh, you know, perfectly good film. I thought Michael
I'm
Shannon
only ever
really
going to see it because of the awards.
Michael Shannon was good in it,
like,
but otherwise
I do not care about
well,
that
actually
movie.
Everybody Octavia Spencer was good in it, but it's like overall as a story and the impact of it, I just like, okay, you know, it's Guillermo del Toro, typical kind of stuff. I didn't see what the big deal was.
I feel like he is too visual and not narrative enough, just in everything.
Maybe.
So much of his stuff have great set pieces, great looks, even sometimes a great hook, but often the story...
I'll tell you this. I think that...
That said, I've never seen Cronus, and I feel like I need to do
I
that.
I think Pan's Labyrinth benefited greatly from being in Spanish.
I would agree. I would agree.
I'll bet if it was in English, it wouldn't have had near the impact. And maybe if I was a native Spanish speaker, I would think it didn't have much of an impact.
I was just thinking about this recently, because I was watching some shit in Cantonese, I think. I don't know. I watch a lot of foreign language, like shitty foreign language movies. And I was suddenly thinking, I was like, a lot of times the actors, I mean, sometimes they're clearly somebody's, you know, uncle. But a lot of times they seem to be better actors than their equivalents in the U.S. Mm. And I'm like, is that true? Or is that because I don't know what shitty acting in Cantonese sounds like?
Yeah, that probably is true.
Because I'm like, because you get that. I mean, it's an extension of the whole, if it's in a British accent, it sounds more intelligent. But yeah, if it's in a foreign language, I'm like, is that so? Especially if it's got one with tonal impact.
Sure.
Like, it just doesn't sound the same. Right. And so I'm like, she seems really good. Is she not really good? I mean, the movie still seems crappy. The lines she's saying are dumb, but she seems really good at it. But am I just not? It's like, is she a shitty Chinese actor? Like, I don't
know. How would you know?
So that has occurred to me recently. But yeah, Pan's Labyrinth was amazing. But these are holding less credit for me these days. It was an amazing movie that I never want to see again. And so that was cool. As time goes on, I kind of forget bits of it and stuff, and I'm like, I just remember I never wanted to see it again. Because I remember the bits that are the reason why.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Pan's Labyrinth was great. I'm getting a little bored with Del Toro.
Well, that's understandable, because, I mean, it's...
I think he would be cool as, like, my friend. But...
It's pretty much the same thing. Over
yeah,
and over.
I get with a lot of these filmmakers. I'm like, I already know what Spielberg's version of pretty much any story looks like.
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing.
It'd be good, but I've seen it.
I'm watching The Post, and I'm liking a lot of it, I'm kind of thinking of the things that bothered me about it in terms of the storytelling and how oversimplified some things were and how it seemed to hit some formulaic beats or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of coming up with all this in my mind. And then at the end, you know, I didn't realize this while I was watching it, but at the end it said directed by Steven Spielberg. And I thought, oh, that explains it. That explains everything. I mean,
literally a kid's show used to make jokes about something being Spielbergian in the mid-90s, people. Steve, I love you. Keep producing things. But there's nothing to show us anymore.
Yep, you could definitely tell.
And then there's others like Polanski who can just die in a fire.
But anyway, how was your week?
Not great. It's been exhausting. There's been a lot of stuff going on personally, professionally.
Is your mother-in-law? I should have asked Trish while I was.
My mother-in-law is good. She's home now. She got home. They took her home yesterday. This morning she already had broken her brace, so they had to fix that. Oh. But yeah, I saw pictures of her getting in the car going home. Saw pictures of her sitting in her chair at home. The cats finally got to see her again and stuff, so she seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, I saw Trish right outside and I didn't even know.
Yeah.
But I knew I was late, so
that's yeah. But yeah, it's been a hell of a week. I started playing a new video game. I finally broke down. It's not like I've been writing with my time anyway, so. So I started Horizon Zero Dawn. I am just assuming your wife has played this game.
No.
Really?
I thought about it a lot, but...
I find that very surprising.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that are attractive about it, obviously, but I'm not sure she quite gets into the whole fighting dinosaur machine thing part of
okay.
it. Like, that doesn't really resonate.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, she probably will sometime play it, but she's been distracted by things.
That's sort of, for those who aren't familiar, it's sort of the premise of the game, is it's post-apocalyptic, and you guys are doing everything, you know, low-tech tribes, bow and arrows kind of thing. But also, in addition to regular animals that you hunt and things, there are machines that are basically animal machines out. So you'll, like, see a herd of things that basically are robot horses. Hmm. And they're dangerous, and you have to watch out for that. And basically, I believe a lot of the video game is basically going to be explaining to how we got to that situation.
Okay.
Because, like, you're a mysterious orphan who's shunned by the tribe, and then you grow up, and, you know, all it's not a, that certain aspects are familiar.
Yeah.
I'm liking it. There's a lot going on. Like, you have a lot of different kinds of equipment. And there's a lot of crafting and stuff, and it's just a lot to juggle. And it's kind of fun, but sometimes it feels overwhelming. Also, you know I love the Assassin's Creed games, and I play them decently, I think. For some reason, outside of those, I suck at stealth gaming so bad. And a lot of this is like sneaking up on shit, because it's shit that can totally kill you unless you are strategic about it or tactical about it. I have dropped the difficulty. There is another layer I could drop it down to. I haven't yet. I don't die a lot. I just find it very challenging in places. But we'll see. I'm enjoying it. The story is very interesting. It's very open world. So yeah, it's pretty fun. I'm still in very early part of it. We haven't really been watching much. We're finally starting the new game.
Oh, yeah.
The Dresden Files one. It's a very slow start in City Creation. We are going to be in a fairly small town somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. I got my way in that. I've already forgotten what our current themes are. We got a couple of them. I know one aspect is we have waves of misguided activism. Like, something, we haven't detailed it yet, but something causes, like, hippies to come to our little tiny town. But, like, they don't contribute any... To quote Eric Cartman, they're hippies. They don't have any money. So they're not so much a boon on the town as they are just a particularly young and colorful group of homeless people in our town. And yeah, I think we've made this like isolated enough so that since its founding, like, it's kind of a haven for people who want to come and do things they don't want other people to know they're doing. There's a lot of Haven jokes coming up, by the way, in this, about the TV show Haven, because it's a very similar vibe in some ways, which is funny because that show sucked, but
never saw.
That's okay. It sucked. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think I got much else going on.
Do you know who Matt Berry is?
Give me some context. I might.
British comedian, does mostly like sitcoms and stuff in Britain. Toast of London. He did. He was the boss in IT Crowd for the later.
Oh, see, which I still haven't watched that one. I probably would to see him, but the name doesn't. Something happened to him? Did he die? Did he?
No, it's anything? Just someone suggested I see IT Crowd and Toast of London, which he's in both of those things.
Mm.
He's the only person that's in both of those things. And we've been watching it, and it's okay. It's not you wouldn't typically be my thing, but I mean, they're like 20-minute things, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My wife comes home from lunch and we want to watch something on television. It's got to be quick. We'll watch it. I just didn't know if you were familiar with it because it's British.
No.
Although most of the jokes are very clearly about like British actors and stuff.
Yeah.
We do not get any of it.
It can be very tricky. I watch a lot of these panel shows, including ones that are like political ones.
But
so
Peter Davison, did he play one of the Doctor Who's, one of the Doctors? Peter
Yeah, he was the fifth Doctor.
Well, anyway, he's in it as himself.
Oh,
but,
nice.
But not really as himself.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
yeah.
And I think that happens a lot, that there's actors in it as themselves, but I don't get it because I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Peter Davison, I knew who he was, and I knew he was playing himself, but like, I'm sure other actors are coming in all the time, and that's what's so funny about it.
Yeah.
And I don't get it because I don't know who they are.
You did remind me of two things. One, we did see something else. We watched John Mulaney has a new Netflix comedy special, Kid Gorgeous, live at Radio City, I believe. Hmm. Kid Gorgeous is the main title. I think a lot of you are familiar with John Mulaney. He has done my favorite comedy bit ever, the Salt and Pepper Diner. Remember this? What's New Pussycat?
No.
You don't remember that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, crap. I'm going to have to make you stay after class so you can listen to it. Because this is my favorite comedy bit of all time. For the rest of you, just type in John Mulaney Salt and Pepper Diner in YouTube. You'll find it. This is a very good set he did. Apparently, some of it is he did as part of his monologue when he hosted Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago.
Mm.
So if you heard that, it's in that vein. I feel like it's a little bit of a change for him, but I'm okay with it. It's a very much a like an evolving, growing up kind of thing. There's just a slightly different vibe to it. Also, at a certain point, he's going to talk about a man named J.J. Bittenbiter, I think, who was a police detective who would come in and tell them about stranger danger and stuff. That is a real person. People have dug up footage of him having these talks. So when you hear about this insane thing that you're pretty sure he made up, it's a real guy. You can find him out there. Yeah, so I would recommend that for stand-up fans and Mulaney fans. And also, there's this show on Comedy Central right now called Taskmaster. And it's like a goofy comedy game show. And in particular, it's this... The one character is coming up with these random tasks that these five comedians, not even five comedians, it's five celebrities do, and they're just showing the footage of like every, they're like, okay, this week we're going to talk about this challenge and stuff. And of course, the person setting out the challenge is also comedian Reggie Watts. And they're just funny things. It's like, you know, they have a basketball and there's a basketball hoop and they're like, you have to pick up this basketball and make a basket, but you can't use your hands. But like they've got a shed full of stuff, so like different ones are finding different ways, and you see the highlights and stuff. But the people on it are, like I said, Reggie Watts is the guy, but the actual contestants are Ron Funches, for those who love her, Lisa Lampanelli, who's another comedian. If you haven't followed her in a while, you should check this out. She has changed her look and style in a big way. She used to be on a lot of Comedy Central roasts. She looks very different now. Another comedian whose name I can't remember because it was not a comedian I was familiar with. some dude who's a DJ. Like, literally, he's famous enough a DJ that he's on this. And actor Freddie Highmore, who I didn't realize was British, and that freaked me the fuck out.
Really?
I think I've said before, I am pretty good at spotting British actors doing American accents, even if they're good at it. There is some intangible thing that I can frequently be like, I think he's actually British.
So, you thought his British accent in Willy Wonka was fake? Or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was fake?
He was in there?
He was the kid. He was,
really? I didn't know that.
He was Charlie Bucket.
I did not know that.
And he was also in a movie, in that movie about the guy who wrote Peter Pan or whatever. He was a little kid in that.
Wow. My first knowledge of him starts with Bates Motel.
To my knowledge, all of the roles, he had lots of roles as a kid. Mm-hmm. And all the roles he had up till Bates Motel, he was a British
that
accent.
Would make sense.
Because he was a British kid.
I didn't know he was in any of those. I just knew Bates Motel, and I didn't catch it. He does a really good accent.
Did you see Charlie in the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp?
The Johnny Depp one? Oh, fuck no.
Oh, okay. No. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I thought you meant the Gene Wilder one. I'm like, I don't
know. No, that would have been too long ago. He was Charlie Bucket. That's actually a pretty good movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's not too bad.
I'm a little off Johnny Depp for a variety of reasons.
And Freddie was good in it. And who else? And there were really everybody was good in it that was in it. But Johnny Depp was actually the weakest part of the whole thing.
Okay, well, the through line here was meant to be, Freddie Highmore's really good at an American accent. But apparently the through line here is, Tony doesn't pay attention to all the child actors he watches and should have already known that Freddie Highmore was British. So, take whichever story you find more interesting. But yes, he's on that. But, epilogue to me finding that show. I kind of like that show. I'm waiting because I think Trish should watch it. I found out on accident via YouTube. They stole it. It's a British show that's had multiple series. And all I know just from like the still photo is the guy who sets the tasks and things is comedian Greg Davies, who I recently have just fallen in love with. I think he's hilarious. So I'm very excited about that.
You know what? Johnny Depp was in both the movies that I just mentioned that Freddie Highmore was in as a kid.
What was the other one again?
The one with about the guy that wrote Peter Pan.
Oh, see, that one I believe I did see. But I couldn't even tell you how many children there were, let alone what they looked like.
Kate Winslet was in it. And
maybe. Okay, I'm willing to buy that. It was a very forgettable movie to me.
Oh, I thought it was pretty good.
I remember thinking it was good.
Finding Neverland.
I forgot it. Yeah, something about that.
But Peter,
again,
was,
it was a little revisionist, which I did not
agreed.
Care
yeah,
for.
That's a problem. But Peter was played by Freddie Highmore.
Yeah.
He did a really good job. He did a fantastic job at it.
Too bad he went on to kill his mom. So sad.
I feel so bad about recommending that show to you. I thought that once the first couple episodes were done, you'd be able to...
I'm okay with you feeling bad about it. I think a little self-flagellation on that one would do you good, because something's going to happen in the next 10 years, and I'm going to tell the police it's because of that show. I don't know what it is yet. I'm not threatening anybody. I just can feel it in the back of my head, the little countdown. I'm going to go nuts.
Okay.
No, I'm fine. Actually, it was... I like the fact that I now know how good an actor Freddie Highmore was. Like, it made this more interesting. And how good they are. I mean, it certainly didn't cause my love for Vera Farmiga to shrink at all. She's fucking amazing.
Well,
I've recently been seeing earlier stuff of her. Like, I didn't know her beginnings, so I was like, she's always been fucking amazing.
Yeah, well, and her arc in the whole series is so good. It's
from
so
what I read, it was very interesting.
Very interesting. And fun to watch. I'm just amazing. And some of the scenes between her and Freddie are just, I don't know, I guess, I mean, there were a lot of things that bothered me and my wife also, but the performances and those two, the chemistry.
You guys just
so
focus
good.
Very clearly. And at this point I don't do that as well anymore. I seriously think the bar for me watching stuff in terms of just being bothered by it is dropping all the time. Or for me not watching stuff
well,
because
it's
I'm
not
bothered
like,
by
I can't
it.
Blame you. I mean, it's getting harder to see things on the screen and not be reminded of things that are like really going on out in the world, and you're like, how can I be entertained or even you know, how can I even appreciate this as a piece of art when it's, you know, life is pretty much exactly like this going on for real, and it gets kind of depressing.
Yeah. Also, super sad confession. On the other side of the scale, I've a little bit made peace with Family Guy. Like, I don't watch it regularly, but, like, if it's on... It used to be, like, if I was just looking for something in the background, I would skip it.
Sure.
I've kind of... And I don't know why, because it's not any less offensive to me than it used to be. I don't know. There's something about it that seems really stupid and hollow now, so that, like, I can just sort of... I'm not fazed by any of the things, and it can just be something on the background, and I can be like, eh, every once in a while.
Well, like, this Matt Berry show, Toast of London...
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible show. I mean, the only reason that we're watching it is because someone recommended it, and there are parts of it that are kind of fun, and something about him is a little fascinating, just watch him do his thing, but it's awful. I would never recommend it for anybody, and most of the time we watch it, we're like, that was terrible. Why do we keep watching this? Because sometimes it's just gross, and I don't like gross humor. But, I mean, you know, we're sitting there, and it's like, well, we got 20 minutes, and we kind of like to watch something, and sometimes it's funny, so let's watch it. And that's it, you know. IT Crowd wasn't very good either. It was better than this.
There's a lot, there things don't, sitcoms especially often don't age really well.
Well, they're not that old. They're 10 years old, I guess, but still. Not that old.
Did you ever watch Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
Well, see, the thing is...
is that Matt Berry?
Matt Berry is in some of it, but no. But the guy... One of the main guys is in IT Crowd.
Yeah.
I forget.
Yeah, his name. Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, yeah.
But wait, so the main guy in Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is not... The guy playing Garth Marenghi
is not
Matt Berry?
No, but Matt Berry is in some of the episodes, I guess. I haven't seen him. I've only seen a few of the Marenghi ones.
I love that show. And I specifically love that it had one series of six episodes. Like, if it had gone longer, it would... Because it's not... It's a little one-trick pony, but it's enough for six half-hour. Like, it's pretty hilarious.
I've seen a few episodes, but I haven't seen it. I didn't see the ones with Matt Berry in them. Because he wasn't in all of them. But it was pretty funny. I mean, the ones I saw, I didn't see them all. Because I think I saw them on YouTube or something. But the main guy who plays Marenghi is pretty funny.
And Richard Ayoade, who's playing a character who's playing a character badly.
Yeah.
Like, well,
and the bad editing's very clever.
Yeah. And just the weird, I don't even know if you say satirism, of, because they're showing it currently, but it's from the 80s, and so there's lots of dumb throwbacks to, like, political views or technological understandings and stuff from the 80s. That cracks me up, but of course, if you really want to go for that vibe, you find yourself a show called Yes Minister.
Yes Minister, no, I haven't heard of that one.
It is an old, I don't know if it was 70s or 80s sitcom, and it's basically a guy. I don't remember the exact premise, but basically a dumb guy who's not a politician ends up becoming a member of parliament. I don't know if it's like on accident or if because nobody else ran or something. And so he's got this staff and they're doing things for him, but they know how the system works and it's incredibly corrupt and it's incredibly behind the scenes and all this. And he's still trying to be an honest guy. And there's a lot of them sort of corrupting him into doing politics and him pushing back and trying to be a good guy or sometimes not and all this. But what it basically comes down to is it's the 70s and 80s. And actually, there was a spinoff series called Yes, Prime Minister, because, oh, that's what it is. He's not just a member of parliament. He's a cabinet position in the government. And he eventually becomes prime minister in the show. It's just a sitcom with jokes about British politics from the 70s and 80s and a laugh track. Like, it's the most unapproachable thing as an American, unless you just... I just love the Britishness of it. It is just, like, so intensely British. And everybody's very proper, and even when they're not proper, and that's the joke, they're still pretty proper. And, like, all sorts of silly, like, because, yeah, the conservatives versus the labor and all of that jazz, and it's pretty funny if you're me, and really probably not for anybody else. But I'm just saying that if you want to go full British sitcom, that's even more so than, like, Are You Being Served? Or keep it, like, that one gets so British, it's unintelligible. It's in English,
that,
but, you know.
That's a lot of British humor for me, because well, sometimes I don't even understand what they're saying.
Like I said, I just watch it for the Britishness of it, but the funny thing, you watch it long enough, you start to figure shit out. I know a lot more about British politics than I used to, because I watch a lot of Mock the Week and stuff, and it's usually, most of the jokes are very generic, and I'm like, it didn't even have to be that guy. Because they hate all politicians. In any party, they'll complain about them. It's very similar to how here, a certain brand of people are like, yeah, Republicans are evil, and Democrats are stupid. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. And over there, it's the same sort of thing. Labor Party is dumb, and nerdy, and conservatives are heartless, you know, landed gentry and shit like that.
What it seems... What I seem to observe about British humor is they can make fun of Britain like other countries would make fun of Britain.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it seems like when you see Americans make fun of America, it's still the way Americans, you know what I mean? It's like, anytime I see American humor make fun of America, it's inside America. It
yeah.
doesn't feel like the way another country would make fun of America. But when British people make fun of Britain, it seems like when they make fun of place names or names of people, it's like, yeah, that's what someone from France would make fun of.
I would guess that's because of the Empire.
Yeah, maybe.
Britain as a nation is very well traveled, so they know what everybody says about them.
I suppose so.
And also, they're pretty, I mean, now shit's going weird, but they're a pretty heavy nation of immigrants also, and there's a lot of cultures there, and they mix in interesting ways there. And there's probably the whole us being a dominant superpower bullshit. Anyway, we are almost out of time, so you should really draw something out of the hat, or else crying will occur.
Crying.
And earbuds all over the nation.
Craig wants to know whatever happened to the Briar Rose Project.
Well, Craig, I'll field this one. we set it into the microphones, and it went through wires down to a server. Deep inside a mountain guarded by a dragon. Sorry, no, that's the Rift Tracks theme song. No, what did happen to the Briar Rose Project?
Well, believe it or not, it's still progressing.
I do not believe. Next!
I'm glad someone remembers to ask about it. There was a while there, a year or so ago.
Couldn't get the rights?
No, where I thought, well, I'll just keep updating people on it, even if nothing's happening, but that just seems stupid. So I decided, all right, well, I'll just wait until I have something significant to report, and there just never has been anything, because where the thing is now, and has been for the last 2 years, actually, is, I've got a guy who's working on putting it together and doing all the sound effects and all that other stuff. But, of course, he's doing it on his own time, and he's had some family crises intervene.
Is his brother named Belgium?
No. So it's been, there have been some unfortunate incidents that, of course, I didn't feel at liberty to go into detail about. So I'm in a place where, you know, I'm just going to have to live with the fact that people are going to have to practically forget that it ever existed until I can surprise them and go, see, it didn't go away, it didn't die, we did finish it, surprise, and maybe everybody will be happy after not hearing about it for 3 years.
If it finally gets released and I become rich and famous from it,
I don't know.
I'm going to be really mad that it took so long.
Well,
like, I will be calling you from one of my homes in somewhere tropical to bitch about why I had to spend these extra years.
I mean, I heard I did get an update from the person who's working on it.
Do they listen? Maybe this will nudge them.
No. This was just a month ago.
I know. Yeah, nobody really listens.
They said that I'm making some progress on it, and as soon as...
It's not true, though.
As soon as I get to a Coffee certain point, listens. I'll have something to send you. My boss I have listens. Heard some samples of pieces Jazz of it, and it sounds listens. Really good. But it's pretty involved. I mean,
Town listens
there's
every time.
Music. Can't stop him. He's composing original theme music for all this stuff. And there's the...
Robert Goulet is dead, so I'm not sure who this is.
The sound effects and so on. So
is this James Franco?
No. It's a very involved process. I mean, which isn't to say it needed to take as long as it's taken. But again, he's doing it in his free time, which it turned out he didn't have as much of for about a 9-month period there when some things were happening in his life and so on. And
he got pregnant.
He's got a real job. So, you know, it's just, it's been hard, but we haven't given up on it. I haven't said anything about it because there hasn't been anything to say. So, like I said, I've just kind of gotten into the mindset of, well, you know what? I'm just going to hope that when we get to a place where I can share it with people and it's done, everyone will be pleasantly surprised it even still exists and won't hold it too much against me that I didn't have anything to say for 3 years.
Actually, Craig, we're doing the Foley work on it right now. That's the sound of a witch exploding. I think that happens somewhere in there. I think there's some exploding witches.
I appreciate you asking, Craig. But it is still out there. It is still going on. And another thing is, even after he finishes his bit, it still won't be done because they're still editing to do.
Standards and practices have to okay.
Well, like, is it going to be in episodes and how long are each episode going to be? Are we going to cut certain pieces out because it doesn't really fit with the flow of the story?
More sausage.
Obviously, we're not going to do anything like pickups or anything because it's way too far gone for that. But we might cut some things out of it.
Some green screen reshoots.
One thing that held things up was that there was a particular actor whose recordings we didn't get, and we let that go for probably a couple of years in the production of it to begin with, because there were other things that we could work on.
And then once Breaking Bad was done, Brian could come in.
No, and then we had to recast, voice. And then we had to get a new recording. And so there were a lot of things that held it up even for about half of the time that we've been working on it before we could really get into post-production in earnest. But then, like I said, this guy had his own stuff. And this is how it works when you're doing a project and everyone's volunteering their time. Sometimes it takes a long time. That's why a lot of times these projects...
I didn't volunteer. I assumed I was getting paid at some point.
Okay. But that's why a lot of these projects don't get finished in a timely manner, or sometimes don't get finished at all.
Sausage! This is super non-sequitur. How you feel about Solo coming out soon? Sorry, we have to say it right. Solo, A Star Wars Story.
I am so excited about this movie.
Are you?
Oh, boy. I hope I love it. If I don't, well, I won't. But I'm really excited about it. My brother is not, because he's a big Harrison Ford fan, and he's very upset that they didn't cast a certain person that he wanted for the role, and he just can't get over it. So
Veronica Belmont.
No, Indruber, I guess his last name is. What is his first name? I don't know. Anyway,
Marcia.
There was a movie out. Where that Harrison Ford was in it, and there were flashbacks
of
young Harrison Ford.
And this was, okay.
And this guy played young Harrison Ford, and Scott liked him and thought, well, if they're going to do prequels for Han Solo, cast this guy. But he was so impressed with this one guy, basically. I don't know if they could have cast anyone
else. Yeah. I can't talk about my things this because I just remembered something more important I have to talk to you about. So pissed off. So, Odd Wings.
Yeah.
Don't get excited. No progress has been made. But I have the issue that it's set in Grinnell, but I don't want it to be Grinnell.
Right, right.
I call it Green Mountain. Mm-hmm. And then somebody pointed out there was already a Green Mountain, Iowa.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit. So I get a brilliant idea. Brilliant. I'm going to look up whoever the man, I know it's going to be a man, is from whence Grinnell, the town, and Grinnell, the college, get their name. I'm going to find out if this man was married, or if, barring that, a sister or something, find out their maiden name, or I guess in the sister's case it would be a later married name. Anyway, name of the sister, and then name it after that. And it'll be like a cool Easter egg thing.
Yeah, that is cool.
So...
That's a very good idea.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I thought that was awesome.
It is a good idea. Great idea.
And so I look it up, and Grinnell, the town, and Grinnell, the college, are named after, I believe, Reverend John Bushnell Grinnell.
Wow. Okay.
Who's a pretty cool dude, among other things, major abolitionist, conductor on the Underground Railroad. And sure. Very cool guy. Among the things he did was help found another town in Iowa, mm-hmm. which, because he was apparently a devoted husband, he named after his wife's maiden name.
No way.
Chapin.
No way.
Seriously. Like, I don't believe in this shit, but somebody put a curse on me with that one. I was like, that fucker got to it 150 years before me. What, like, I mean, he had that idea before then. John Bushnell Grinnell. And I may end up going with Bushnell,
actually. Yeah, I was
going to
say, there's
not one of those. But his wife was Ann Nay Chapin. And I'm like, Chapin, oh, good, Chapin College, Chapin Iowa. And I was like, just to be safe, is there Chapin Iowa? Shit, there is. And I looked it up, and it's literally, he's like, named it after his wife. It's not even incorporated, but yeah, he was... I was like, God damn it, dude. This is some Back to the Future bullshit here. He's my Biff Tannen or something. Oh, my God. I could not even believe that. Like,
Bushnell's good, though.
If I'm super honest, I'm okay with losing that name just for the... Because yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
I got punked by somebody who's been dead for over a century.
I mean, Bushnell probably is, like, his mom's maiden name or something. That's... I mean, usually names like middle names like that that sound like last names are last names. Someone.
I am vaguely annoyed that anybody it came up with kept bringing up the binoculars. There's a famous binocular brand that makes like the binoculars are Bushnell binoculars.
Sure. Yeah, right.
Bushnell. It didn't occur to me, but if you know another pair of binoculars that I could name a town after. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. It's been a little more active lately. We've been talking about some shit. I've been showing up to talk about some shit.
You especially.
Well, see, I'm trying to give back to the community. no, like, here's the thing. We tell people to write there, mm-hmm. but then I don't say anything to them. Mm. And I'm like, what's the impetus for them? So I decided I'm going to try and actually respond to shit on there, with the exception of when you and Jazz start doing your encyclopedia off. Like, I can't even cope. I can't even get through those, let alone respond to those.
Okay.
I'll leave that to you. The high-end academic discourse, mm-hmm. 2,000 words or more, is your category to go after on there. But I'll hand all the dumb shit that Azure Talent said. And people trying to make me play Wussy Dresden because they couldn't hack it with real Dresden.
Real Dresden.
All right, yeah, that's it. And also, listen again next week and the week after that, and keep listening. Otherwise, this just feels like two dudes masturbating in a room. And I think I speak for both of us
when I say we don't like that.
We don't like that at all. William might like it. I don't know. I don't like that.
It's not like that.
It's very... We don't enjoy that. Sometimes we make eye contact. It's awkward.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat... at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.